Okay, we're beginning here by the two dots on the top of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, according from the Mishnah, Balazav Ubalkeri Eina Mitamim, the Zav and Balkeri only become Tamei once it has exited their body. Zav Dichtiv, the reason by Zav that we say this is because it says, Ki Ye Zav Mi Bisaro, Zovo Tamehu. So the Ki Ye Zav Mi Bisaro, Ajie Se Zovo Mi Bisaro. And so the Zav to the emission leaves his body. Balkeri dichtiv, and by Balkeri it says, Ish ki teitse mimenu shechvat zera. So again, it has to leave him in order for it to be tamei. Tosafot, interestingly enough, asks why the Gemara needs these sources, because why would you have thought otherwise? The fact that a woman is tamei'ah, when she's in nida, zava, yoledet, all of those things, before it exits her body, that's a chiddush in of itself. So why would you need a pasuk to tell you that this is the normal situation? You would have assumed, had you known nothing, that all of these emissions only make you tamei when it exits the body. The chiddush is by the woman that it happens even kibifnim. So why does the Gemara here require a specific limud to tell you otherwise? So Tosafot suggests that maybe there would have been some sort of limud that comes from the zava, the nida, that emissions now have a different standard, and that maybe even internally it could make you tamei, so therefore they need a pasuk to exclude it. Now they also learn out of the word mibsaro, not only that it is achietze mibsaro, we've already learned earlier that mibsaro means mibsaro v'lo meonso. But those of us again suggest that there are two limudim that come out of this, and so it's both mibsaro and bisaro v'lo onso. I think you could separate between the limudim, between the mem and the rest of the word, but there you have two limudim that actually emanate from that one word. Hayo chel b'truma v'irgish. This is something, again, that we dealt with earlier in the Masechta back on Daf Yud Gimel. It's quoted in the Mishnah here. There's an individual who has a beginning of a sighting of a seminal emission, and he's eating truma, and he needs to prevent himself from becoming tamei until he swallows the truma. It says there that he should grab a hold of his member, stop the emission from taking place, swallow the truma before he becomes tamei. The Gemara asks, Ocheiz, how could it be that he grabs a hold of his member? V'hatanyo, don't we have a baraita Rabbi Eliezer Omer called Ocheiz ba'ama u'mashtin? Anybody holds their member and urinates, ki'ilu mevi mabul li'olam, as if he brings the mabul to the world. And as Rashi notes over here from the Gemara, that one of the Averot of the Dora Mabud was Ki Hishchit Kol Basar Darko Al Aretz. And they're reading Hishchit as Hashchata, which is the causing of unnecessary flow of semen. And so to over here, a person who touches their member in a process that is not involved in intercourse, then they're going to cause other problems in terms of seminal emissions. So Amar Abaye, if I says that's not a problem, Matlit Abba. Here he uses a thick cloth to grab a hold of the member so that there's no sensation that is felt because of the thick cloth. Rav Amar, afilu teimer matlit raka. Rabba says you can even do it with a thin cloth. Kevin de akar, akar. At this point, it's over. Everything is done, meaning that he already has had a sensation of the semen beginning to leave his body. All he's doing right now is preventing it from actually exiting. His holding the member at this point is not going to increase the flow of semen or cause any more of a problem. And therefore, even with a thin cloth, it would be permitted. Abaye worries about the fact that you could then increase the flow of semen. Even though normally we would assume that in this situation, what's done is done, and using the thin cloth, like Rava said, should not be a problem. Abaye says you could increase the flow or the intensity of the flow, so there can be additional stimulation that could be problematic in this instance. Rava, lo supe, lo chayish. Obviously, Rava does not subscribe to this view of Abaye that it will increase the flow, or you can increase stimulation in this situation. And Gemara says, Vatanya, how can he say that? Don't we have a breita? Lama zedome? What is this similar to? Notin etzba ba'ayin. Like someone puts a finger into their eye. Because goes mancha etzba ba'ayin midamat v'chuzeretu midamat. As long as the finger is found in the eye, it continues to irritate the eye. It's not that the finger in the eye somehow finishes off and then the irritation is done. As long as the finger remains in the eye, it continues to irritate the eye, and the irritation increases in its intensity. So that's similar to our situation over here, which is that as long as you continue to stimulate, there will be an increased flow, there will be increased problems. That's the mashal that is brought in the Braita, which seems to indicate, like Abaye, that there is an increasing intensity, increasing problem, as you continue to engage in this manner, similar to when you have your finger in the eye. It causes continued and increasing intensity of irritation. So to over here, holding the member is going to cause increased stimulation and increased intensity of the discharge of semen. There are two different types of flows that we're speaking about here. When you're speaking about a flow where the Mishnah already says, Nakar, it already happened, whatever's going to happen, or that stimulation is going to generate the flow of semen, that's already taken place. All you're doing here is preventing the exit of the semen in this situation. In that type of case, we don't worry about there being additional stimulation or increased intensity. Where we do worry about that is when it is a slower flow of semen that's coming out, where there's already a certain amount of stimulation, but it's not where he's reached any finality to that. Then you have dripping or intense intensity, where that increased stimulation is going to cause more and more of a problem. So that's in cases where it's caused by friction or other things. There, if you maintain the intensity, it will remain a problem. Over here, where he's already seemingly reached a peak and the semen has ne'akar, over there to repeat or to have something like that continue to be a problem, Rava feels is not the case. And that's why he lets you use even a thin cloth in this situation. We discussed this back on Daf Yud Gimel. There the Gemara discusses the issues of holding one's member. There are trade-offs. First of all, the trade-off here, which is the problem of causing stimulation or causing problem of hashkatat shechvat zera. On the other side, there is the prevention of the urine falling on the individual, causing, whether it's soiling of the clothing or the person themselves, as well as in the time of the Gemara, there was suspicion that if one could not urinate properly, that they also could not reproduce, and that would cast dispersions on their children. And that's because the Gemara believes that an individual who can't urinate in an ark, that's an indication that they don't have the quote-unquote muscle power to project their urine far away from themselves. If that's true, they also then don't have that same power to project their semen. And if the semen isn't projected in an arc like the shot of an arrow, then it can't fertilize. It's not mazria. If that's true, then that would cast dispersions on this individual's ability to reproduce. Because here we're seeing drops of urine where it's dripping out and it's found on his feet and his body, on his clothing, indicating that he doesn't have the ability to urinate in an arc. And if I add those together, then it casts dispersions on him being the father of these children. And then that raises the question of who is really the father of these children. And maybe they are mamzerim. So there is that tension in this situation. The Gemara over there and his brat Alocha discusses different heterim in terms of being able to hold one's member when they are urinating. Again, the ones that are mentioned here, including maklita va, using a thick cloth. Although we don't know what's thick and thin, so that also makes it a little more difficult because we don't know exactly what that means. It is also different if one is married. The Mishnah Berurah brings that down, the halacha, that a married individual may not be subject to these rulings because even if they have stimulation, they have an outlet for that. And even when their wife is a nida, maybe because pat pisalo, it's not considered to be an issue. And so therefore we are a little more makiel with individuals who are married in cases of necessity, but in general, we dissuade one from coming into contact or to stimulating their member. Amar Shmuel, kol shikvat zera, shein kol gufo margishba, eno mitama. Anytime where a person has a seminal emission, where they don't feel it, have that sensation of it throughout their body, meaning that their body shudders, then eno mitama. That's not the type of semen that creates tuma. My daima, because shikvat zera amar rachmana, the Torah says it has to be shechvat zera. That's the word phrase that's used in the Torah for semen. Biruya lazria. Shechvat zera is because it's mazria. It is able to fertilize. It's able to impregnate. So it has to be that type of semen in order for it to make you tamei. Obviously, Shmuel is saying that without that type of seminal emission that involves the entire body, then you would not produce semen that is able to be mazria, is able to fertilize. Meteve, is that really true? Hayaf miharher balayla. Person was having improper thoughts, unclean thoughts during the night. Bamaru matzab bisarocham. He wakes up and finds himself warm. Tamei. We assume that he is tamei. So over here, the assumption being in the brayta that he didn't have any sensation. He doesn't know that the shechmat zera has exited his body. We are making a supposition that he is tamei because of bisarocham. If it had been that he had had the sensation or had a feeling that he had discharged the semen, then there wouldn't be any question over here. But that shows you that you can become tamei even though you never had that sensation, even though you never had the kogufo margish. That's what it seems like from this braita. Targuma Ravuna explained the braita, bimishamesh mitato bichamumo, engaged in intercourse in his dream, and therefore the efshar the shamesh below hargasha. You can't have that intercourse without having the feeling or the sensation that Shmuel described, and therefore we assume that that's what happened in this case, because the two are heavily correlated. Given that correlation, the assumption is that even though he doesn't know for certain, or he didn't have that sensation, we can presume that he is tamei because of the circumstantial evidence here, including the fact that he had a dream about intercourse, and bisarocham, he is warm, or he is in some way somewhat stimulated. All of those are indications that something must have happened over here, and therefore we assume that he is tamei. Lishna achrina, we have another version of Shmuel's statement. Amar Shmuel, kol shechmat zera, she'enu yorek kecheitz, enu mitama. Any shechmat zera that does not shoot out arc, like the shot of an arrow, then it's not mitama. Again, for the same reason that we said before, which is that unless the semen is projected into the woman, it will not fertilize, it will not successfully produce an offspring. And so Shmuel again is saying, unless it is ra'oi lahazria, it's not going to be classified as shechmat zera, that is mitama. Ma'ika ben ha'ilishna la'ilishna. What's the nafkamina between these two expressions, or these two formulations of Shmuel? Both of them in the end are saying the same thing, which is, you need to be ra'oi lahazria. So what's the difference between the ra'oi lahazria that comes from hargashat kol gufo, versus the ra'oi lahazria that comes from the arcing of the semen or being projected out like an arrow? Igamenayu ne'ekura behargasha v'yatsa shelo behargasha. The nafkamina is exactly the difference between them, which is that you can have a sensation of the semen being produced or being ejected without you actually having the sensation that it's left the body. So that'll be the difference between them. The ne'ekura behargasha is the first statement of Shmuel, which is that as long as the body has the sensation that there's been some sort of production or that the semen is going to be ejected, that's enough to make you tamei according to the first version. According to the second version, that's not enough because you need to have the sensation that it leaves with force, and that you didn't have. So in that situation, it would be tamei according to the first version, and it would be tahor according to the second version because you lack the yorek echeitz aspect, even though you have the harkashat kol gufo. Tosafot asks your question. Tosafot says, don't we have a gemara in the Darim, in your Vamot, that says that if it's not yorek echeitz, then it will not produce offspring? So how does the first version of Shmuel deal with that? We said it has to be ra'oi lahazria. It has to be able or have the capacity to fertilize in order for it to be tamei. And one of those qualifications is, based on the Gemara Nedarim and Yevamot, is that if you do not have a seminal emission that is yorek echeitz, it will not impregnate a woman. And if that's the case, then it's not ra'oi lahazria. So how can you separate out the issues? How can you create a nafkamina, which is, oh, if you have argashat kol gufo, but not the sensation of yorek echeitz, you're still tamei. But that is the qualification for ra'oi lahazria, which is what Shmuel said in his first statement, that the reason you have to have hargashat kol gufo is because the Torah says shechmat zera, which is ra'oi lahazria. But absent the yorek echeitz, you're not going to have that. So Tosafot gives two answers to that. V'yesh lomar, one answer is, d'la'alishna, according to that first lashon in Shmuel, that you only need it at the beginning of the seminal emission, That's where you need it to be Ra'oi Lazria. You don't have to be have it finish off like that. You just need it to start like that. Inami Ra'oi Lazriahu Elishena Ra'oi Laitaber. That the semen has the capacity to fertilize, but it will not impregnate a woman. And that's different. According to that Lashon, you're right. That even though the semen is not projected like a Yoreka Chait, and it will not successfully create a fertilization, nevertheless, it has the capacity to fertilize because it is Shechvat Zera that can be Mazria. It will not successfully complete conception, but for instance, today with the modern science where they can take that semen and then use it to fertilize an embryo, then you could have it be Ra'oi Lazria. So Tosafot gives two answers. One is that you only need Ra'oi Lazria at the beginning of the process, or the other answer is that all you need is Ra'oi Lazria. It doesn't have to be Ra'oi Lehitaber. It has to be Ra'oi to be able to fertilize, but it does not have to be Ra'oi to impregnate. And that's a different qualification. So one is that the semen inherently has the capacity to fertilize. The other one is, can this individual create a conception? The difference would be that if it only needs to be Ra'oi Lazria, then it just has to be semen that has the capacity to create a conception. But even though this individual, if he has intercourse with a woman, will not be able to create fertilization in the woman because he does not project the Shechvat Zera, nevertheless, it'll be Tameh, because all you need is Ra'oi Lehazria. That's a distinction that Tosafot makes because of that first statement of Shmuel, which he differentiates from the second statement of Shmuel. All right, Milta d'pshita le'Shmuel, mibayi le'Rava. What seems straightforward to Shmuel was actually a question for Rava. The Bai Rava, Rava asked the following question. Ne'ekra b'hargasha, yatztash lo b'hargasha, ma'u. It's exactly the nafkamina between the two versions of Shmuel, is a case where the emission was felt at the time that it was produced, but they did not have a sensation of the semen or the emission leaving the body of the individual. What's the din there? Is that Shechvat Zera that is Tameh or not? Tashma, balkerish tabal, below itil mayim. You have a balkeri, which is someone who had a seminal emission, that is going to the mikveh, but if he goes to the mikveh before he urinates, then kishitil mayim Tameh. When he urinates later on, he's considered to be Tameh. This is one of the qualifications or necessary prerequisites to going to the mikveh for a seminal emission is that the person must urinate before they go to the mikveh. So for those people who want to go on Tahara Bayit and have to be Tahor from Tumat Balkeri, when they go to the mikveh on the day before when they are going to Hara Bayit, they have to make sure that they urinate before they go to the mikveh in order to avoid that problem, which is that if you did not urinate and you urinate later, then you have a tumah that is associated with it. Now, the tumah there is created by the residual shechvat zera that is left. And when you urinate, then it's pushed out. And that makes you tameh again because you now have a new seminal emission. What you see from that is that the emission doesn't have to be bahar gasha. Because it's clear that whatever happened or the majority of what happened already took place long before this. We're talking about some residual shechvat zera that is in the member that's being pushed down now, and that's considered to be tameh. So that would be an answer to Rava's question. You don't need the hargosha when it exits the body. You just need the hargosha at the time it's produced. It says, shani hotam, the rubah bargasha nafak. That's not necessarily true because there, everything else took place bargasha, which means prior to this, he had hargosha for the production of the seminal emission as well as the release. Or the emission itself took place, he had a sensation for all of that. This is just the residual that's left over afterwards. Since the majority already was done by Hargasha, this residual is drawn by whatever happened prior to this. So you can't judge it independently and say, oh, there's no Hargasha here, so it's Tameh anyway. It's Tameh because the majority of what left happened by Hargasha. So this is just a part and parcel of that. It got left behind, but there was Hargasha originally, and therefore it's joined to the hargasha that happened before. So now Gemara says, Lishna achrina, amri lo, there is another version of this. Amar Shmuel, kol shechvat zera, sheno yurek kecheitz, eno mazrat, that any shechvat zera does not exit and is not projected like the shot of an arrow, then it's not successfully mazrat. Azruei hu delo mizra, hatmuyei mitamyo. The inference you would draw from that is that it will not successfully fertilize the ovary. It will not create a conception, but sounds like it would be Tameh, despite that. And you don't even need a Hargosha by Akira, because otherwise it would accord with the first Lashon of Shmuel that we saw before. Shenemar, because it says in Dvarim, with regards to the Machaneh, when you go out to battle, Tiye Becha Ish, Asher Lo Yeh Tahor, Mikre, that if you have an individual who is not Tahor, Mikre, because of some happenstance that took place, but here it's Mikre Laila, they didn't bring the rest of the Pasuk, which is that it was something that took place at night, which is a reference to a seminal emission, Afilo Keri Ba'ulam. Mikre is just any keri makes you tameh. It's not a shichvat zera. It uses the term keri or mikre over there to say that tum'ah is not driven by the ability to be mazriah. It's simply determined by the emission of the shichvat zera. By Rava, ovei kochavim shehir her, v'yarad v'taval mahu. And ovei kochavim, who is converting, and before he is converting, he's mehaher, he has some sort of unclean thoughts. As Rashi notes over here, v'ne'ekar. Then the production of the semen has already taken place, meaning whatever is going to happen has taken place. It just has not exited his body at this point in time. So he's along in the process whereby, like Shmuel said before, maybe even had a hargashat kol gufo. He had this shuddering of the body, but the semen has yet to leave his body. He goes down to the mikveh, he converts, and then after he comes out of the mikveh, the emission leaves his body. So they're separating, or basically the same nafkamina that we spoke about between the two lishonot of Shmuel. They're using the mikveh to be in between here. There's a conversion that takes place in between, between the ne'ekar and the sighting of the emission. Just physiologically, I'm not exactly sure what the Gemara is referencing to between the two items, because usually they come pretty close together or simultaneous. They are discussing some sort of delay between them. And if you take up Shmuel's position that it has to be kol gufo margish, that means that the person's already had the experiential aspect of the seminal emission, then the emission usually takes place immediately afterwards or simultaneously with that. Over here, the Gemara seems to be able to separate between them. If it had not been for Shmuel's statement, you could say that the Gemara is speaking about the production of the semen coming to the forefront versus the actual emission that takes place. So you could have it that the stimulation creates or brings the semen to the forefront, but it's only exits the body afterwards. So maybe that's what they're discussing absent Shmuel. But given Shmuel's din, it's harder to understand where exactly that fine line is. But the Gemara is saying along that continuum of that fine line, what happens if he converted in between? Im tim salomar batar akiras linan. If you say we go after akira, which means the original production of the semen, or according to Shmuel, the shuddering of the whole body. Hani mile l'chumra. That's only when we say l'chumra it's going to make you tameh. Of a hacha de l'kula, over here it actually make him not tameh, lo amrina. Because the akira happened when he was non-Jewish. It's only the emission happens when he's Jewish. So the akira then being the key pivotal point will actually turn out to be the kula here, not the chumra. In general, it's a chumra, which is that the akira makes it that you would be tamei, even though the emission later on does not have any sensation, or you do not feel it, it's not your ekechet, then you'd still be tamei. Over here, it'll turn out the other way around, which is the akira happened when he was not Jewish, and therefore it'll actually make him tahor, because you're missing the key aspect of what makes you tamei when he became Jewish. Or doma loshna. Or maybe it makes no difference, whether it's the chumra or the kula, we still say that akira is the key element of the tum'ah, and he had the akira before he was Jewish. Teiku, we leave that as an unresolved issue. Bai rova zava shenekru meme raglea v'yarda v'tavla mahu. A zava, again, who had the sensation of wanting to urinate, or was ready to urinate, and then she goes down to the mikveh, and then comes out and only urinates afterwards. So this is dealing with what's called mayan hazav, or mayan hazava, which is that liquids that pool before they are discharged by the body have a din of mayan, which is that a zav or a zava that spits, that urinates, that spit or that urine is tamei because of mayan. It's mitamei lach, not yavesh. But it has a high level of tumaz, mitameh b'maga, and b'masa. So over here, the woman was a zava. And then, ne'ekar. The urine was ready to flow, whether it left the bladder and now is exiting, is in the urethra. I'm not sure, again, of what the physiological description the Gemara is giving over here. But something happened that she was ready to urinate, but she did not urinate. She goes to the mikveh, now she's no longer a zava. And then only the discharge of the urine happens after she left. So where is that point at which it matters that it becomes a mayan? It's only when it's discharged from the body that it becomes a mayan. And therefore now it was only discharged from the body after she was torah, and there's nothing to discuss. Or is it once the urine begins to be ready to flow out? It leaves the bladder, it's on its way out, she has the sensation she needs to urinate. Is that already enough to make it that that is called a mayan? And there, despite the fact that she went to the mikveh, that was already a mayan while she was a zava. And now when she urinates, she's just discharging whatever it was, a mayan or a problem, before she went to the mikveh. Im timsalomar batar akiraz linan. If you say we go after akira, then this urine should be tamei, even though she's gone to the mikveh. Hani mili, but that's only true, but shechvet zera. Delo matzi nakidla. Because over there, you can't stop the process. It is an irreversible process that the seminal emission will take place. The matzi nakidla, there then, urination, one can stop it. You can hold it in. They can hold back from urinating. Maybe their akira is not sufficient in order to make you tamei. So nakila lo. Odoma loshna. Maybe it makes no difference. Akira is always the factor that matters. Take you again. The Gemara leaves that as an unresolved issue. Next question. Bayrova. Ovedet kochavim zava. So an ovedet kochavim who's a zava midrabanan. Because as far as nidan zava are concerned, they only apply to Bnei Yisrael. They don't apply to non-Jews. We saw earlier in the Masechta that they were gozer by kuti, by an obey kochavim, that they were all considered to be zavot. So here you're dealing with exactly that. Obey kochavim zava. She's a zava midorabana, not a zava because midoraita. She's a zava. She nekru meme ragla, where she had this sensation or the release of the urine, but she has yet to discharge it from her body. Biarda b'tavla, and then she goes and converts. Mau. What is the din of that urine when she discharges it after she has converted? Now, we just asked that question with a Zava Israelite. Why should there be a difference over here? Imtim Salomar Batar Akiraz Linat. If you say, in the previous case, we conclude that Akira is the pivotal point, and therefore the woman who was a Zava, who had Akira of her urine, and only discharged it after she went to the mikvah to become Torah, that still would be Tamei. Make her Tamei, and the liquid itself would be Tamei. If you say that, even though you can hold it in, that's only true by a Jewish woman, because her tuma is doraita, therefore akira is a more pivotal factor there, and even though she can hold it in, which might have differentiated it from shechvat zera, we still say we go bata akira, maybe that's only on a doraita level. Her whole tuma is just an institution midrabanan. It's not a real tuma midoraita. Maybe lo. Maybe over there we would not consider akira to be a sufficient grounds to make you tamei or make the discharge tamei. Odema lo shna. Or maybe it makes no difference. Akira is the pivotal point, and therefore when she urinates after she's converted, she will be tamei'a. It will make her tamei'a because it touches her, and she will produce liquids that are tamei'im. Teiku, again, we leave this as an unresolved issue. All right, umetamim bekoshein. We said in the Mishnah that all of these discharges, nida, balkeri, zav, all of them are metamim bekoshein, with any amount, any trace makes you tamei if it's discharged. Now, we said before also in yesterday's daf that that makes it into a din of ro'ah, meaning that only dinim, where sighting is the problem, are they tameim bekoshein. If the tuma is because of nigiyah, because of contact, then you would have to have some minimum shiur at which it would make you tamei for coming into contact with the item. That was one of the nafkaminot we saw yesterday between whether a polet at shechvat zera is a problem of ro'ah or a problem of nigiyah. So Amar Shmuel, zav tzarich kechatimat pi ha'ama. That in order for a zav emission to be problematic, it has to be enough that it would seal up the entrance way to the member. So that gives you some sort of minimum shiur, and Tosafot discussed yesterday, if that is true, then that means that this physician believes that the problem is a problem of nigiyah, and not a problem of broa. Shenemar, o echtim bisaro mizovo. That the pasuk says that v'zoti etumato bizovo, rar bisaro et zovo, o echtim bisaro mizovo. That there was a sealing of his basar by the zav, and that means that it filled in the entranceway to the member, the orifice there. That's the requirement of a shiur. Vatna anantnan. What about our Mishnah? That says mitamim mekoshein. That says that it's tamei even with the slightest amount. Hu damar ke Rabbi Natan. It's machloke tanaim. And Shmuel subscribes to Rabbi Natan shita, detanya. Rabbi Natan omer mishum Rabbi Ishmael. And it's not just Rabbi Natan. He has a b'misora from Rabbi Ishmael. Zav tzarich kechatimat piyama. Velo hodulo. And the Chachamim disagree. My time with the Rabbi Shmuel. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shmuel's position? It's similar to what we just said in Shmuel's position. Damakra, o yechtim bisaro mizovo. V'rabbonon, why do they not read that the same way that Rabbi Shmuel does? Haumi baile, they need that pasuk to teach you, lach mitamei, venu mitamei yavish. To teach you that only when it is moist is it mitamei, the zavi mission itself, not when it is dried out. As Rashi explains over here, that only when it is in a liquid form will it seal up the orifice of the member. If it's already dried out, then it would just fall away. It would drop away and wouldn't stay there. So to be chatimat piyama, it would only be true if it actually is in a liquid form. Rabbi Shmuel learns that ha'u mirar navka. He learns that out from the fact that earlier in the pasuk it says rar bisaro. And from the word riro, which means to drool, it's used in Shmuel Aleph when David makes himself crazy before the king, that was Goliath's brother who wanted to take revenge on David. David pretends to be crazy, and over there it says that he has riro, that he has drool that's coming out of his mouth. So the word rar references to a liquid. And so Rabbi Shmuel learns it from rar, that it has to be in liquid form, or it has to be moist. Rabbanan, ha'u l'minyono udata. We need that to tell you how many emissions you need to become tamei. The pasuk says, "Bizotie tumato, bizovo, that's one, rar bisaro, trey, that's two, et zovo is tlat, is three." And then the pasuk finishes off, "O ichtimet bisaro, mizovo, tumatohi." And the Chachamim already told us, "Echtim bisaro teaches you that it has to be moist and not dry." Limed al zav, baushlosh riyot. Now that you have the word zav appear, or this emission appear three times in the pasuk, that tells you that a emission of a zav that reaches three times, shechayav b'korban. Not only is he tamei and in shivinikim, he also has to bring a korban. Orichtim bisaro mizovo, tamei. So there, the word mizovo, the men means from amongst his zov, mixat zovo tamei. That's easy, even if you don't have a full three, only a partial amount, you also are tamei. We made al azav bal shtei riyot. That teaches you that azav that only has two emissions, shemitamei mishkav u'moshav. He has the full dinim of a zav of three riyot, with the exception of a korban. He'll have the same levels of tumah, he'll have the same requirements of shivinikim, he just won't have to bring a korban. So the Chachamim learn from that pasuk three different things. One is about a zav who has three emissions, that he is chayav a korban. Number two is a zav that has two emissions. They learn how the word mizovo, that part of what you saw earlier in the pasuk, makes you tamei, and that's a zav of two emissions, but has all the same rules as a three emission zav with the exception of a korban. And we learned out a echtim et bisaro, that the zov is only mitamei lach, veinu mitamei yavesh. Rabbi Shmuel, minyono, minole. How does he know about the three emissions and two emissions of the zav? Nafkele min Rabbi Simai. He learns it like the view of the Tana Rabbi Simai. The Tana Rabbi Simai Omer, Mana Kaduv Shtayim, Vikaro Tamei, Shalosh, Vikaro Tamei. The Tosuk has three times and two times, and it says that in both instances, he is Tamei. Ha Ketzad, how do you reconcile that? Shtayim L'Tumah, two of them make you into a full-fledged Zav for Tumah, Shalosh, L'Korban. And the third one makes you Chayav Korban. What Rabbi Ishmael is saying is that in Perek, Tedvav, Pasuk Bet, it says, Dabru Obenei Selva, Martin Lehem, Ish, Kieh, Zav, that's one, Mibsaro, Zovo, that's two, Tamehu, that's two emissions. In the subsequent Pasuk, in Gimel, it says, Bizotiet Tumato, Bizovo, Rar Bisaro et Zovo, two, Oyechim Bisaro, Mizovo, three, Tumatohi, that's three emissions. So that's the way that Rabbi Yishmael learns it. Tosfot points out that obviously these Tanaim don't darshan the word et, which we saw other Tanaim do before, or they have some other drasha that they use the word et for. According to the one, meaning the Chachamim, who learn out the two emissions and the three emissions from Pasuk Gimel, because there they say Mizovo teaches you that, then Ish Ish Kiyazav Mibsaro Mayovibe. What do they do with the first Pasuk? Pasuk Bet, that Rabbi Shmuel uses for the two emissions, what do they do with that Pasuk? Mibayle Achi Etzei Mibsaro. That's what we learned before. Ish Kiyazav Mibsaro. Until it leaves his body, he's not Tamei. But the Pasuk continues and says, Zovo Tamei. Lomali, what do they do with that? They made Ela Zov Shehu Tamei. That teaches you that not only is the person who has the emission Tamei, but the emission itself is Tamei. So in that way, you have now the two different ways to learn the Psukim. I sent out a chart that has this annotated on the Psukim. It also has a summary chart showing you the different Libudim of the Rabbanan and Rabbi Shmuel. Each one of them learns the Psukim differently, which then prevents the Chachamim for having Hechtim B'Saro available to teach you that there is a minimum Shiur. Therefore, they believe that the Shiur is a Koshu, whereas Rabbi Shmuel has Hechtim B'Saro teaching you what the minimum Shiur is. Amar Rabbi Chanilai Mishum Rabbi Lazav Rabbi Shimon Shichvat Zera L'Ro'eh B'Mashu L'Nogeya B'Kadasho. In order to be Tamei for a sighting, then the minimum Shiur is anything. Any amount that is emitted will make a person in Tamei for a seminal emission. This is what we already discussed. If it is a sighting problem, there is no minimum shiur. But whereas nogeya, someone who comes into contact with the shechvat zera, then you need a minimum shiur of a kadasho. Vanan mitamim b'koshein tanan. Didn't our Mishnah say that they are mitamei, meaning they make you tamei even at any amount, which sounds like even if you touch it, any amount will make you tamei. My lav l'nogeya, sounds like that's the din of a person who comes into contact with shechvat zera. Lo, the Ro'eh, our mission is speaking about sighting. It's not speaking about coming into contact with the shechvat zera. It's talking about a sighting of shechvat zera where we agree that a Ro'eh is a bashu. Tashma, chomer b'shechvat zera mi b'sheretz. There are stringencies by shechvat zera, by semen, that don't exist by the tumat sheretz. Chomer b'sheretz mi b'shechvat zera, and vice versa. There's certain chumrot by the sheretz that don't apply to a shechvat zera. Chomer b'sheretz, the chumrah or the stringency by tumat sheretz is she'sheretz ein chaluka tumato, that there's no distinction in its tuma. We will see in a second in the Gemara that means that there's no difference in the size of the sheretz, gadol or katan. Either way, it makes you tamei. Mashen kein b'shechvat zera, which is not true by semen, whereby the age of the individual discharging the semen will make a difference. The difference between a person of age and a person below, or a minor who does not have this din. Chomer b'shechvat zera, and the stringency with tumat shechvat zera is shechvat zera mitamei b'koshu, that shechvat zera causes tuma even with the slightest amount. Mashen kein b'sheretz, which only creates tuma with a kadasho. My lav v'nogeya. It would make sense to say that we're speaking about negiyah here, because sheretz only has tumat negiyah, and if you're contrasting shechvat zera with sheretz, it would sound like you're saying that negiyah for shechvat zera is a koshu, whereas for sheretz, it has a minimum shiur. It says, lo, l'ro'eh. It has to do with the sighting. Va dumya de sheretz k'tani. Well, if you say it's speaking about an emission or a sighting, then what does that have to do with the sheretz? How are you contrasting something about shechvat zera that doesn't exist in the world of sheretz? Ma sheretz b'negiyah, av shechvat zera b'negiyah. You would assume, just like the tumah that we're talking about by sheretz is negiyah, so too by shechvat zera. Amravada ba'ava, shum sheretz k'tani, v'shum shechvat zera k'tani. It's not contrasting them in the exact same situation. It's just contrasting them in general. Within the world of shechvat zera, we have a kol shehu. That's not true by sheretz. Even though in the world of shechvat zera, it's in the world of sighting, which doesn't apply to sheretz, nevertheless it's a chumrah, because there is a concept of kol shehu by shechvat zera. In the world of sheretz, there is no kol shehu. There's only things that have a shiur, even though again, by sheretz, sighting is not even a relevant issue. So Gemara says, v'sheretz lo mitamei b'mashu? Wait a minute. If maybe the whole assumption here is incorrect, because now you're telling me that a sheretz doesn't have a din of a kosho, v'anantz not. Don't we have a mishnah in Oalot? Hayevarim ein lehem shiur. When it comes to a whole limb, a limb does not have any minimum shiur. Pachot mi kezayit basarameit, even if it's less than a kezayit basarameit, which is mitamei, bimmeit, and makes tumat ohel, so over there, even if it's less than that, the eiver, it still makes it tamei, tumat tamet, and has problems of tumat ohel. Upachot mi kezayit basar, nevela. Similarly, less than a kezayit of nevela, which does not have tumat nevela, nevertheless, if it's an eiver, it will be mitamei. Pachot mi akadasha mi asheretz, and by asheretz, even if it's less than the minimum shiur of a akadasha, as long as it's an eiver shalem, then it is mitamei. So you do have tumat mashu by asheretz. Where it says, shiny eiver, the kule b'makom adasha koi. It is because of the significance of the eiver that it is classified as giving off tuma. It's not because the eiver is a koshu, it's because it's a whole entity. Once it's a whole entity, it's the same thing or equivalent to being the size of a kadasha. Why do you need kadasha? Kadasha or kazayit, all of those are shiurim that indicate significance. So here you can replace the significance with the whole eiver. And so a whole limb has significance in of itself, irrespective of the shiur. But that's not to say that it doesn't have a shiur. It has a shiur, it just meets the shiur in a different way. My says, Daha, and I can prove that to you, Dilu chaser porta, eiver mi kametamyo. If you're missing any part of the eiver, if it's chaser in any way, it's not mitameh. That shows you the whole significance has to do with the wholeness of the eiver, the complete eiver being there, and that shows you that it's about chashivut. It has to do with the significance of the item. Just like shiur produces significance, so too eiver produces significance, and it simulates the effect of having a shiur. And therefore, I would not call it a kol shehu here because of the significance of the item. Shechmet zera de chaluka tumato mahi. I explained it when we read the Braita based on this conclusion of the Gemara. But what does it mean that Shechmet Zera has distinctions in its Tumah? Ilema ben Yisrael de Nachrim, if you want to say it's a distinction between Jewish Shechmet Zera and non-Jewish Shechmet Zera, Hakanami Ika, you have the same distinction within Shvatzim, which is Achbar Diyam v'Achbar Diyavasha. The Achbar is one of the Shmona Shvatzim, which is Mitamei, but that's only true if it's Al Haaretz, if it's the land version of it. So the Achbar HaYavasha is Mitamei Kesheretz. The Achbar HaYam, the similar form or whatever this is that they're referencing to, the mouths of the sea, is not Mitamei Kesheretz because it's not on the land, it's in the water. So if you want to distinguish between a Yisrael and a Nachri, which are two different entities, and there's the Shechmet Zera is distinct, then so too by Shvatzim. I have the Sheretz HaYavasha, Sheretz HaYam, two distinct entities, and they have different dinim. So why is that unique about Shechmet Zera? Ella ben Katan the Gadol. The difference is between a minor and someone who's of age. Because by Shechmet Zera, if the person's of age, then that is Shechmet Zera that can be Mazriya. And since it can be Mazriya, then that individual is producing something that is Tameh. If he's a Katan and not producing something that can be Mazriya, then that Shechmet Zera is not going to be Tameh. Whereby sheretz, doesn't matter what size it is, it'll be metamei, no matter how big, how small, how old, how young. The question of katan and gadol over here, it may not mean that katan and gadol is our standard threshold of 13 years old. It might be that the threshold here is 9 years old, which is the threshold at which, the Gemara says, a boy reaches the ability to have bi'ah, or his bi'ah is considered to be bi'ah. So the cutoff here may not be 13 when we're speaking about Katan and Gadol. The cutoff might be 9 years old. Amara Papa Kitenaye. This distinction in the size, the shiur that you need for Shechmet Zera to be mitamei is Machloket Tanaim. Minayin the robot, nogea b'Shechmet Zera. How do I know that if you come into contact with Shechmet Zera, that it is tamei? Tamalomar Oish. It quotes a pasuk from Parshat Emor. The only problem is, the O'ish appears twice. And that is in the Psukim, in the beginning of Perek Chabed, Pasuk, Dalet and Hey, it says, Ish Ish, Mizeraron, Vhutzarua, Ozav, Bakodoshim lo yochal, Adasher Yitar. Vanogeya, Bakot Mei Nefesh, O'ish, Asher Teitse, Mimenu Shechvat Zera. Someone has a seminal mission. Next Pasuk is, O'ish, Asher Yiga, Bakot Sheretz, or he comes into contact with the Sheretz, Asher Yitmalo, that causes Tuma. Ova Adam Asheit Malo, or a person that is Tameh, the Chol Tumato, all of those make the person Tameh, and he cannot partake
in the Kodoshim. So you have, first of all, a seminal omission, and you have Negiah B'Sheretz. And then you have the word Oish appears in both places. So it says, Oish, Asher Tetzin Man of Shechvat Zara. And it also says, Oish, Asher Yigah B'Chol Sheretz. So Gemara says, Oish teaches you that even Negiah touching Shechvat Zara is going to make you Tameh. Upligei Tanayei V'Alma. There is a general machloket, Dika Damre. There are those that say, Domina, Umina. When you learn something from a different area of Halacha, not only do you learn actual din, you learn all of the ancillary issues that come along with it. Some say simply that you learn from there the major aspects of it, but all of the traits or character traits of it, you learn from its location, meaning from its own type. So here's an example in our case over here. The one who says domina mina, ma sheretz minigia. Just like the O'ish that's written by Sheretz teaches you about Shechvat Zera, so that's how you learn out Negiat Shechvat Zera, you learn that out from Negiat Sheretz. Just like Negiat Sheretz is Tamei, O'ish teaches you that Negiat Shechvat Zera is also Tamei. Av Shechvat Zera b'Negiat. So that's the major factor that you're learning. Umina. And now some of the traits you will also learn from the Sheretz as well. Ma Sheretz b'Kadasha, ach Shechvat Zera b'Adasha. Just like a Sheretz as a minimum shiur for Negiah of a Kadasha, so too Shechvat Zera, which is learned from Sheretz, will have that same requirement of a Kadasha in order to be Tameh. That's one opinion. The other opinion is, that you learn the major aspects from that, but then you minor, or the character traits, you learn from the Shechvat Zera itself, Ma Sheretz b'Negiah, Shechvat Zera b'Negiah. Oish, that is written by the Sheretz, that teaches you Shechvat Zera. So that teaches you, just like Negiat Sheretz is problematic, so is Negiat Shechvat Zera. Va'uki ba'atra. But now bring it back to the world of Shechvat Zera. Ma Shechvat Zera l'ro'eh b'mashu. Just like my Shechvat Zera sighting is b'mashu, af nogeya b'mashu. So too, contact, coming into contact with it will be b'mashu. And that will explain the machloket over here, that which Rava said, that only by ro'eh it's a mashu, by Negiat it is actually a minimum shiur of Kehadasha. What we're saying here is that is actually a machloket Tanaim based on the source for Negiat Shechvat Zera, which comes from Sheretz. Question is, how influential is Sheretz over Negiat Shechvat Zera? Is it just teaching us the broad din that Negiat matters by Shechvat Zera? Or is it also teaching us all of the particulars, including the size of what makes you Tameh when you are Nogeya? I'm the Rav Huna Brei de Rav Natan, the Rav Papa. Mimai the Omiish the Sheretz Kamirabulai. You made an assumption that they learned that out of Pasuk Hey, which is Oish Asher Yigah B'Chol Sheretz Asher Yidmalo. So there you thought the Oish is the Oish that's associated with Sheretz. Dilma Oish Asher Tinsei Michmenu Shechvat Zera Kamirabulai. The Oish that they're referencing to is not the Oish of Sheretz, but the Oish of Asher Tinsei Michmenu Shechvat Zera Pasuk Dalit. Or the Kuliyama Domina Mina. And everybody holds, you learn all the major and minor aspects from it. But here, the Riboy is not from Sheretz. The Riboy is Shechvat Zera itself. Shailinu Litnae, they asked the Amoraim, who were familiar with Braitot, and used to present the Braitot before the Tamidei Chachamim, Ike Detani Kirapapa, the Ike Detani Kiravuna, Dreider and Minyatan. Some of them had a Braita that learned Oish from Pasukhei, from Sheretz. And some of them had Talmud Omar, Oish, was from Shechvat Zera. And that would make the difference, because if you learn it from Oish by Shechvat Zera, there's no reason to believe that there is any minimum shiur, because you're learning out Negiah from Ri'iyah. And once you do that, then it's clear that Ri'iyah Shechvat Zera is Mashu, then Negiah Shechvat Zera should also be by a Mashu. If you learn it out from Sheretz, then there's opens up the machloket as to whether when you learn something from another object, how much do you learn from it? And the difference would be, do you only learn Negiah from Sheretz, or do you also learn the minimum shiur from Sheretz? Now, Tosafot photo over here says, I don't understand what the happening of the Gemara is. Why would you ever learn from Sheretz when you have an O'ish that's found by Shechvat Zera? It makes more sense to use the O'ish that's from Shechvat Zera to teach you something about Shechvat Zera than it is by Sheretz. So Tosafot points out, the problem is that, oh, Isha Sher Tetzei Mimenu Shechvat Zera is talking about Ri'iyah. So if you're talking about negiyat shechvadzera, it actually makes more sense to learn it from sheretz, which is speaking about tumat negiyah, than it's learning it from shechvadzera, that is talking about re'iyah. So he says there is a logic to both sides. Oish makes sense because it's attached to shechvadzera, and you want to learn about shechvadzera. On the other hand, oish of sheretz also makes sense because there it's talking about tumat negiyah and not tumat re'iyah. So then Tosafot asks, well, why do you need oish at all? Why don't you simply say the juxtaposition of riat shechvadzera to negiyat sheretz? That hekesh in of itself should have taught you that there is a problem of negiyat shechvadzera, because the two of them are juxtaposed over there. So Tosafot says in the end, had it not been for the ribuy of oish, I would have thought that the hekesh is only there for that which is explicit, which means riat shechvadzera, negiyat sheretz, there's a hekesh between them. But not to change shechvadzera to negiyah, that's not relevant. Oish comes to say, not only is there a hekesh for riyah of shechvadzera and negiyat sheretz, but there is even more than that, the hekesh. He also now teaches me that negiyah by shechvadzera is a relevant problem. That's true from the oish of shechvadzera. Or if you learn it out of the oish of sheretz, you would never have assumed the oish of sheretz is talking about shechvadzera had it not been for the juxtaposition of the two issues. And since the shechvadzera is mentioned right before, that's why it makes you learn oish by sheretz to be speaking about shechvadzera. So Tosafot says the hekesh is important, and so is the oish. They are both necessary to reach the limud that negiyat shechvadzera is impactful. And so we see here three different opinions about the shiurim with regards to shechvadzera. We have Shmuel says, based on Rabbi Natan, Rabbi Shmuel, the emission has to be kechatimat piyama in order to be mitameh. We have our Mishnah, which is the Shita of the Chachamim, which is koshu, is mitameh. And then we have Robo, who adds in a different dimension, which is, yes, by ri'iyat koshu, but by negiyah, it's ki'adasho. And then, depending on which version of the bright that you have for oish, that might be a machloket tanaim, if you learn it out of oish from sheretz, or if you learn it out from oish of shechvadzera, then that would actually undermine Rava's position, and then that bright that would seem to be suggesting that everybody is learning out negiyat shechvadzera from riyat shechvadzera, and then that would mean that it is a koshu. Then the bright would be problematic for Rava, because then the bright that would seemingly have only one opinion, which is that koshu is mitameh. Right now, next Mishnah. Tinoket bat yom echad mitama benida. A girl, even at the age of one, can be mitama nida. We already learned this earlier in the Masechta, that from the moment she's born, if she has a sighting of dam from that area, then she would be tamei tumat nida. Bat yud yamim itama b'ziva. At 10 days old, she become tamei tumat ziva. The reason for 10 days is because that's the minimum to reach being a zava gdola. If she has, in order to become a zava gdola, she has to have a sighting of nida first. In order to have a sighting of nida, you need 7 days of tuma. Then you need to have sightings for 3 days during yamei ziva after that. So that means you need a minimum of 10 days to become a zava gdola. That's why it says here, the minimum age for becoming a zavak dola is 10 days old. Tinok ben yom echad, a child that is 1 day old, mitamei b'ziva. He can have a zav emission and make become tamei. Umitamei b'negayim. And he also has tumat negayim. Umitamei b'tumat tamei meit. He also, if he passes away, will cause tumat hameit. So now, as Tosafot points out over here, by negayim, it says ish o isha. And by tumat hameit, it says ish. So you would have thought that ish, isha, ish, those terminologies mean only someone of age. So the Mishnah is coming to dispel that and say that that's not true, that even a young child can be mitameh b'negayim, even a young child can be mitameh tumat hameit. B'zokek b'yubum. And if he is alive when his brother passes away, then he is required to perform yibum with his brother's wife. That is because the pasuk says ki yishvu achim yachdav. They have to be in the world at the same time. If a brother is born after his brother deceased, he does not perform yibum because they never lived together in the world. If the baby was born and he was only a day old when his brother passed away, then there is a din of yibum because yishvu achim yachdav. They lived at the same time, even if it was momentary, even if it was only for a day. That's enough to dimim ra'oi the yibum. Upoter mina yibum. If he is born even a one-day-old child will protect the wife of the deceased brother from having to perform Yibum. Even if he passes away afterwards, if he's 1 day old and he's there when the father passes away, that exempts his mother from a requirement of Yibum. Umachil b'truma, and if his mother was a Bat Yisrael married to a Kohen, she eats truma as long as her husband's alive. When her husband passes away, she loses that right to truma unless she has offspring that are Kohanim. So here, if she has a 1 day old child, that's enough to make her a mother of a Kohen, and therefore she can partake in truma because of this 1 day old baby. Uposel mina truma, a Bat Kohen to Yisrael, cannot eat truma. If her husband passes away and she has no offspring, then she can go back to her father's house and partake in the truma of her father's house. That's only true if she has no offspring. Over here, where there's a day-old child, that disqualifies her from having truma. As Rashi notes, the Gemara will discuss that that's not only true if the baby's born, even if she's pregnant, it prevents her from partaking in the truma of her father's house. Vinochel, he inherits, umanchil, and he has the ability to grant nachala. The Gemara will discuss what are the situations here where a 1 day old will be relevant with regards to this. Vargo chaya. If you kill such a child that's 1 day old, that's like killing any human being, and you're chayav mita for that. Varehu laviv ulimo ulukho kuvav kikhatan shalem. And for his parents and all his relatives, he is as if he is a full-fledged young man, a full person. And again, the Gemara will discuss the ramifications of that with regards to Avelut and other things. The end of the Mishnah switched over to a boy because of a Zav, but many of these items would be true by a girl as well. For instance, Yibum, Truma, all of those offspring, whether they're male or female, have the same impact on the mother. Not Chayevit in Yibum. Some of them are not relevant to a girl. Like the ability to perform Yibum would not be relevant by a girl. Or the Nochel Manchil might or might not be relevant by a girl. So that's why they use the example of a boy, in order to have it be consistent that it's always applicable in the latter half of the Mishnah. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Gemara on the top of Mem Daled Amud Aleph.